You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill, Mr. Tax him into oblivion himself. Isn't that right?
You know it, man. You know it. Hold on. I got $5 in my pocket. Let me give you four of it. Hold on. Here you go.
Spike, you're going to have to help me out this show because Daddy's not feeling well.
Hang in there, buddy. It's Friday, man.
I know it's Friday, man, but I got a cold thing, and Andrew, immediately right when Andrew picked up my calling into the station, the first thing he says to me, what'd you say, Andrew?
What did I say? It was like, I could tell you were sick right away. I could hear the sniffles in the,
right.
the voice. Your voice definitely sounded froggy.
Thank you. That's the first thing I want to hear when right before I'm about to start a show. You don't sound good today.
Seriously, Andrew.
So, speaking of things that don't sound good today, looks like there's a new capital gains tax going to be rolling down. This is how sick I am, Spike. I can't even read.
Tell you what, I got plenty of juice.
Okay, all right. So let me see if I can understand this right. So there's a capital gains tax ruled constitutional by the Washington State Supreme Court, which means that if you sell stocks or bonds over the amount of $250,000, then you shall be taxed at 7%, correct? That's the long and the short of it.
Correct.
Deemed constitutional. Now, the raw numbers say that this affects about 7,000 people in the state. Two-thirds of those live in King County. I don't know about you, Spike. I've got money. I don't have $250,000 in stocks, but, I mean, I've got money. I don't like being taxed. But it seems like this has – it's very loaded. There's a lot of really heated opinions over whether or not this is constitutional or not, if this is a slippery slope. There's a lot of emotion behind this, which I find really interesting, being that it only affects about 7,000 people, again, two-thirds of which live in King County.
Well, the debate was whether this was an income tax or a sales tax, essentially, an excise tax.
Yeah.
And what the state Supreme Court was, is it was signed into law and then challenged and taken to the Supreme Court because Washington's Constitution says we can't have an income tax as a state. And then they were saying, well, this disproportionately taxes the people who are selling stocks and bonds. So it's not a level playing field. I think I heard somebody this morning point out that if they had just slapped a tax across the board on Washington, then it wouldn't have been challengeable. They could have taxed everybody 7% with when you sell your home, when you sell anybody who sells property, those kind of things at 7%, and they wouldn't have been able to challenge it. But since it was only for people over 250 and on stocks and bonds, not the sale of your primary property, you know, not retirement accounts, then it became a specialized tax on income of those who have capital gains. Now, the way it was pointed out, as I read it in this story from GeekWire, which did a really nice job because a bunch of different stories today, what happened and encompassing all the details. GeekWire laid it out really well. You know, if you have capital gains on stocks and bonds, right, over the course of a year, you're not taxed on that. That is your income. It's when you sell these.
Yes.
When you sell these off, when you take the profits that you've earned, that is a sale, and that's what's taxed. And what it really boils down to me is, and this is affecting people who are paid in stocks and bonds, mostly in the tech sectors where you find that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Their compensation package is geared to be heavy into stocks and bonds, and it's an incentive because it was untaxable. That's how tech companies got away with paying less base salaries, incentivizing their employees to take it in stocks and bonds because it was not taxable income. And to me, like you said, it's only 7,000 families in the state of Washington. It affects such a small percentage of people, but it's people who literally were exploiting a loophole and getting salary and not having to pay taxes on it. And when they get stocks and bonds as part of their salary, it builds and builds and builds and doesn't get taxed. But when you sell it, it's time to pay up.
So to put this into context, let us just say at one point in time, our good friend Chris Martin ascends the ranks at Google, and he is offered $1 million in stock options. He then sells those stock options, and he has to, in taxes, pay $70,000 out of $1 million. You know what I mean? So from my perspective,
I think he'd only pay on the everything above 250.
Oh, okay.
Right? So he's only paying $750,000 at 7%.
So it's a graduated rate then, correct?
I believe so.
Okay, so the way this breaks down then to me is I don't like taxes. I don't think anybody likes taxes. Do I understand that this is unconstitutional? Yeah, a lot of people have made that argument. But practically speaking, I'm just speaking practically here. If it, and maybe this is just me being naive, Spike, but if I had over $250,000 and it was a graduated rate at 7%, I'm pretty sure, call me crazy, that my accountants could probably figure out how I could get that money back.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
If the lady at H&R Block can figure out how to do my taxes so that I get returns, I'm pretty sure if I've got some lawyers and, you know, a firm that I work with, being that I'm in the upper 1% of income earners in the United States, I'm pretty sure I can figure out how to get that back.
If your accountant can't get it back for you, it's time to get a new accountant.
So,
from my perspective, this is an outrage. Absolute outrage. Yeah. I want my money.
Well, you want your cash. Yeah, we just screwed him over. Yeah.
Right. But, and I understand that people, and this is such a hot button issue for people, taxes. Nobody wants to be taxed. I understand that. I don't want to be taxed. You don't want to be taxed. When I look at this, when I read arguments from Rob McKenna, I understand the legal argument behind it. He says that because the tax would apply to all long-term capital gains, regardless of whatever they are generated, McKenna said that it would be an attempt to collect a tax on activities outside of Washington over which the state has no jurisdiction. He says, therefore, it violates the due process clause of the federal constitution, which says that states might only tax that which they have jurisdiction over. I get all the arguments, but when I just look at this practically speaking, is it really that big of a deal? And at this point in time, until I'm open to being corrected on this, I'm open to having somebody say, well, Jack, maybe you should consider this angle of it, or maybe you should think about it like this. I say no. I get that there's a lot of people who feel very strongly about this, and maybe it's just because I don't have $1 million in stock options. But when I look at this, I go, you got to fork over $13,000 if you sell 250. It's like, Is it really that egregious, I suppose? Is it really overstepping any lines, right?
Anything else that you sell, you'll pay tax on.
Right.
Why should capital gains be exempt from that? Well, you know, if I sell my car, yeah, I'm going to pay capital gains on it.
Well, you know, so some people say that this is going to ruin the business. It's going to take out the tech sector in Washington, that this is going to ruin it. And, you know, there's no other state in the union that has this kind of tax. And the state has a surplus already of $10.6 billion or whatever it is. So, you know, why? And the amount of money that's going to be generated from this is only $500 million. So there's a lot of numbers being thrown around. When I look at it, though, I understand the emotionality of it from some people. But mm-hmm. If you're somebody making $80,000 a year and you're up in arms over, you know what I mean, over a tax that only affects a very small amount of people who are exceptionally wealthy, I think your priorities are maybe out of line a little bit.
Well, you're being sold a bill of goods. That's always right. The slippery slope argument is what we always hear. Same thing with the Second Amendment, same thing with taxation. They're coming for you next. This is how it starts. Like the nose under the tent, every cliche in the book is thrown at us. But Washington's never going to have a state income tax. That's not going to happen. There's always people talking about it, always Democrats, by the way. And it's never, there's no political appetite for that. Nobody's ever going to get that passed. If they try to run out, they're going to get primaried and elected right out of office. So it's not a slippery slope. And people, like you said, people who are making 70, 80 grand a year who are getting whacked out of shape because they've been told they're coming for you next.
Yeah,
this is how it starts. You know, you can't have 17 bullets in your clip. Next thing you won't have any guns at all. I mean, I hate that slippery slope argument.
I hear you.
They've been using it forever on every issue forever.
Well, I'm just trying to be as fair about this as I can, and I want to acknowledge people's concerns because I just don't want to brush them away. Do you know what I mean, Spike? But I understand how somebody might be saying, you know, I'm concerned about me. I've got $100,000 in stock options. What if there's something else coming down the pipeline that says I'm going to get taxed at 15% or whatever it is?
There's a bunch of texts already coming into that concern.
And that is something that does concern me, right? If you start saying, well, you know, I've got however much wrapped up in the stock market that I'm planning to roll over into my house and I'm going to get taxed at 18.6% or whatever it is, I understand that can be devastating to a lot of people. So don't get me wrong if you're that individual. in terms of being solution oriented, again, Rob McKenna wrote an article. This is from last year. Since talking about the possibility of a federal lawsuit should Washington's highest court affirm the state's position, McKenna said it's not easy to challenge the state's taxes in federal court. He says if the Supreme Court abandons its prior precedents and decades that this tax is an excise tax simply because the legislature says it is, again, a position the court has never taken before, the best option is probably repeal it. It is, after all, just a statute that can be repealed by an initiative, as we've seen happen before. So, voting, right? So you have all these people who are now concerned about this. Well, this isn't like the end-all, be-all. It's not like the apocalypse is descending, Spike O'Neill. And what shall we do? We're all about to be raptured because we have to pay 7% on everything that we make over $250,000. Oh, Spike O'Neill, whatever shall we do? The sky is falling. You can vote on it. You can vote on it. And so I think that this isn't, there's no reason to be doom and gloom. I think there's a desire to take that angle and to say, well, this is another example of the state falling apart. In my mind, this is part of the process. There are lawsuits. There's voting. You got to go back to courts. You got to figure it out. So this is, I believe it will be an ongoing thing. I don't think this is the end point of said capital gains tax.
Well, to the texters, which are coming in fast and furious, and they kind of agree with you on that concern. It's like, so what do we do when they lower that amount? How long will that, how long and how low will that limit drop? How low will that limit drop? How long before they lower it? 360 says, you guys really think the 250K isn't going to be lowered? Someone says it's not a graduated tax. I was wrong with that, but you get a $250,000 deduction on the total of capital gains. So everything after 250 is taxed, which is what I was trying to say. I'm glad I didn't say this as correctly and eloquently as I could have. Someone says, Spike, I love you, but. I always love that. The word but, which means they meant nothing before the word but. Spike, I love you, but. Big tech employees pay tax on the stock grants they get each quarter. I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. See, there you go. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Here's another one. It says 425. This is a huge deal. This is simply Washington State trying to get more revenue. When they mishandling the tax revenue, just stop texting. We are being taxed right out of ours. Wait, I'm not sure. I'm not texting you, 425. This is just stop texting. We are being taxed right out of our state. I'm at 30% as a single person. 30%. Ridiculous. So, again, you know, I can appreciate people's perspective on this for as kind of scattered as 425 is on this issue. 360 says, you folks really think that 250K isn't going to be lowered. I'm curious if 360 has any stock options out there. I'm curious if they have anything in stocks. You know, it to me, like this kind of an argumentation doesn't really work for me. I mean, it could be. And if it is, I'll argue against it, so on and so forth. But I think that in many ways, people have been sold this idea that they're coming for you when I just don't see that that's the case.
Well,
and I'm open to being corrected on this.
Yeah, and we don't know. I mean, we're speculating as much as anybody else. Everybody's concern is that slippery slope argument. It's a big deal because once the tax is from the 206, it's a big deal because once the tax is ruled to be legal, there's nothing to stop the legislature from raising the rate or expanding it to cover a lot more people.
425 says, Jack, you are not fair, so stop saying it. LOL, Jack, you are just poor.
Wow. Way to keep it professional, not personal, folks.
So, yeah, thank you very much for that ad hom in there. So you don't care about this tax. You will be next on the liberals' tax scheme list. Well, I mean, maybe, and if that point comes, then I'll argue against it, and I'm sure that everybody will then text in at that point in time and say, Jack, you're only saying this because you're rich. And you can afford these taxes. So this is the way that it goes. But I again, you know, Spike, this is a problem when you talk about taxes mm-hmm. and when you talk about these kinds of things. And I'll just say it. People have been so primed to be reactionary against the idea of taxes, rightfully so in some cases. And in other cases, it's severely misplaced. And I believe this to be one of those instances. I'm happy to have somebody say, and I've read lots of stuff from Rob McKenna today. I'm more than happy to have somebody say, Jack, you should think about it from this angle. Maybe you should take this perspective, whatever it is. But at this point in time, I just say to myself, 7,000 people, all of whom are in the upper echelons of wealth, paying 7%, it just doesn't, to produce a roughly $500 million, I don't see this as the proverbial canary in the coal mine as other people might see it. open to being wrong about it, but I just don't see it as this end-all, be-all, the state's ruined now, we all have to go run and cry. I just don't see it that way. I see it as, is it unconstitutional? Probably, based on what I've read in the law. I'm sure it will get challenged. I'm sure there's going to be an initiative, and there you go. One more tax gain thing here. This is from 253. Quite frankly, I'm very conservative. I don't mind being taxed, schools, fire, etc. I cannot stand the mismanagement of funds. Mismanaged over and over taxation is why I am a conservative, not because I don't believe in revenue. That is very based, my friend.
Very.
That is very based. And by based, by the way, 253, we mean good,
good,
accurate.
Very good.
253 said, what happened to the will of the people? This has been voted by the people, I believe, six times. That's the other part of this that I find to be concerning, is that people have voted on this and people don't want it. And so when you have to take it through the legal system, I want to give credence to that as well, that you then have to go to a judge, which was picked by Inslee, to then kind of get this through. I find this to be kind of like, I'm not really so sure how I feel about it. And then again, here's 425. You are so delusional if you don't think that they've been trying over and over to get a state income tax. Capital gains is income, so in a sense, that is an income tax. That's straight from the courts. Again, you know, I understand it's a very controversial issue for people. I understand that people get very heated about it. I don't like being taxed. I know that other people don't like being taxed. I don't think anybody likes being taxed. But in this case, again, I just don't see it. Spike, I don't know what it is. Maybe I have a bias here. Maybe it's a hole in my knowledge. When I see this, if you're selling stocks 7% over 250, I shrug my shoulders and I go,
it's not going to drive out the tech sector. It's going to dictate how big your outside barbecue is. that's what's going to be affected by this tax. Yeah, but 7% of gains over $250,000 from the sale of tax and bonds.
Right.
I mean, you're right, and it's only $500 million, which is not like it's not going to break. It's going to not going to make the difference in a lot of lives. It's going to make a lot of difference in a lot of lives. That's a lot of affordable housing being built. That's a lot of schools being improved. That's a lot of whatever it takes for the tax base that what we pay into.
Yeah, let's give a little bit to the. So advocates said it's one way that Washington's regressive tax laws can be altered to help lower wage earners and even the playing field of people of color in rural communities who are overrepresented in low income tax brackets. The state has no personal or corporate income tax and generates most of its revenue through sales, property, business and occupation B&O taxes. So I'm sure this is going to be kicking around for a long time, Spike. I'm sure people who are making $30,000 a year will be outraged about this until the end of time.
It will never affect them. but I will say this, man. Thanks to the texters, 888-973-5476. Way to bring it early and often.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys, and I appreciate all of the opinions, especially someone deciding to put me on blast and say that I'm poor. Thanks.
I know, out of the gate.
Thanks.
Did you hear he wasn't feeling well?
All right, we'll take a really quick break when we get back. Coming up next, what do we got on the docket, Spike? I'm so absorbed.
Utah is stepping in to save the children of the
world. That's right.
Utah.
We'll be right back right after this. All right, welcome back. Hey, Spike, before we talk about this thing in Utah, I like to be fair, despite what people might say, and I like to be optimistic.
Okay.
During the break, I realized we were just talking about taxes. People had very strong opinions about the way that I feel about taxes. Have you ever looked at how Washington is rated in terms of the other states when it comes to doing business? Do you ever look up the official ranking of the Evergreen State in comparison to the other 50 states in terms of business, infrastructure, cost of doing business, economy? So on and so forth. You ever look up where our ranking is?
No, I just I hear all the people saying how horrible Washington is to business, right. And I'm too depressed to look.
Right. So if you had to assume, let's play a fun game, shall we? If you had to assume, based on the out of all 50 states, where does Washington rank in terms of its workforce, infrastructure, cost of doing business, economy? So as a state for business, where does it rank? Spike?
I would venture to guess we're in the bottom half.
Okay.
28, 29.
Very interesting indeed. Chris Martin, where do you think we rank in terms of the other 50 states?
I'm going to say 10th.
Ooh, wow. Andrew, you want to take a guess there?
Well, it's Washington, so I'm going to say 49th.
Attaboy. Attaboy.
Out of the top states for business in 2022, Washington ranks second in all 50 states. Can you believe that? with a workforce grade of A in 2022. Infrastructure, of course, is a C minus. Cost of doing business is a C plus, but the economy is an A. Life, health, and inclusion, B plus. Technology and innovation, A plus. Business friendliness, pretty bad, D plus. But overall, second in the country. And you have people who are whining and complaining, saying that it's going to be awful and everything's going to fall apart. This is actually up from the previous year, up from 2021.
Wow.
So it's like, I don't buy this narrative that people love to live in about the region or the state. I just don't buy it because the numbers don't pan it out. And so when people blast text messages at me saying, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, and I've got data to back it up, it's like, what am I supposed to think? Are people so convinced that their state is falling apart through propaganda, or is it they just don't bother to go and read the actual information? I don't know.
I've always found that the loudest voices aren't always the most informed.
This is true. This is true. I mean, it's got one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country. I mean, it's like, I don't know if people feel as if they need to have some kind of enemy in order to justify, or some kind of cause in order to justify their own existence. But there is a way to talk about something in a fair and constructive way. And there's a way to talk about things in an adversarial or combative way. And in one of those, there is an optimistic future in which we can look forward to life in our region. And in another one of those, we can complain about 7% tax that doesn't affect, 99.9% of people who live in the state. So I'm trying to be as fair as I possibly can here. But it what makes it difficult is when people don't bother to access information that is readily available to them. Right?
I mean, that's absolutely.
It's just ignorance at that point in time. And so what do you do then with people who are refusing to actually engage with the data as it is presented and as it is broken down? I don't know. It's like arguing with someone who doesn't want to. If I say 2 + 2 = 4 and someone goes, well, I've heard it's 5. I go, oh, well, okay, well, let's look at the math. And then they go, I still think it's 5.
I'm moving to Idaho where that can be anything I want it to be. Freedom! Freedom of math! Freedom!
I mean, I don't want to come down on people, but it's like, I understand that it's frustrating. I understand that it's difficult. I understand that, you know, no one likes to be taxed. I don't like to be taxed. But just looking at the raw data that I pulled up in the last 5 minutes, it seems like a lot of people are misinformed about the state of their state. And it's so I don't know what to tell people other than, sorry, well, data doesn't pan it out.
Here's right? what we tell people. You know what? I can respect that that's how you feel. We've heard a lot of people say those kind of things. Take a look at this information. See if that makes maybe changes your opinion on where we are as a state in regard to how business thrives in Washington. Just take a look at the info. It's all we can ask.
Right. Yeah. So, all right. What were we going to talk about?
We were going to talk about Utah saving the children of the world.
Yes.
But let me say this before we get into this story, because Utah passed a bill. So the governor signed a bill, was now passed into law, requiring teens to get parental permission before they can have social media accounts. And that these teens will have to give parental access to their parents when they have social media accounts until they turn 18. And that algorithms will not send content. They'll have to watch the algorithms that they send to teens so the teens don't get into these rabbit holes of body dysphoria or you know, all these different things. Advertising will be limited. Algorithms will be limited. Parents will have to have access to these accounts. And this is all under the umbrella of protecting teens from the dangers of social media.
I like this. I'm in favor of this. I'm all for protecting children. Actually, there's so much data out there, Spike, that says that the harms that cell phone addiction has on the developing mind. As someone who has severe cell phone addiction, I can tell you that my short-term memory is totally blown out. It's
No, I hear you.
And so I've always said to myself, Spike, you know, if I have kids, I don't think I would let them have access to like unrestricted access to the internet until they were probably 14 or 15 years old. I think I would be pretty strict in terms of their access to that kind of information because you see the damage that it can do, you know, kids looking at images that they shouldn't see, maybe images of a sexual nature, things
sure,
like that.
You bet.
You have so many predators online. I just feel like the goal should be with children is to try to protect their innocence for as long as you possibly can before they're not to make them ignorant to the world, but you should be the primary thing that they are like, getting their information from. As a parent, they should be absorbing as much of you as possible, and hopefully you're a good person, as opposed to absorbing some stranger on the internet who's, you know, telling them how they should live their lives, like an influencer or something like that.
I, as a parent, I agree with everything you just said, and my concerns and fears about the internet are mirrored to yours. But there are a lot of people who are saying this can it's not all sunshine and rainbows in Utah, because social media can provide safe harbors. It can provide compatriots, I guess is the best word I'm looking for.
And a
friendly environment for kids who don't always get along at home, who don't know really who they are yet, to find shelter and support and solace in. So there's some downsides to this as well. It's not all great, but the intentions are golden to protect kids on the internet.
All right, we'll take a really quick break. When we get back, people are doing hallucinogens in Silicon Valley. Find out why when we get back right after this. All right. So it's been known for quite some time that programmers like to use small amounts of psychedelics in order to improve their coding skills. Did you know about this, Spike?
I had microdosing? No idea.
Yeah. So the idea is that when you microdose, you are able to see things in a slightly different way. I'm going to talk about psilocybin here, just so everybody knows. Andrew, go ahead and hit that bingo card when we talk. Thank Woo! You very much. So the amount of times that I have done psychedelics in my life, I can tell you that it's always a very interesting experience to do psychedelic. Thank you very much.
I thought it was a bold choice to do some during yesterday's staff meeting.
Oh, you're welcome. Good yeah, on I you, thought man. So. I thought so as well. I thought, you know, just kind of loosen up the vibes a little bit. Fun you know meeting. What I mean? So what people are doing in Silicon Valley is they're trying DMT, which is dimethyltryptamine. You ever do any DMT there, Spike?
No, sir. Once when I was in my college years, I made a bet with God and I'd asked him to get me back to his planet. And if he did so, I would promise never to leave again. And I keep my word with the Lord.
Yeah, so DMT is a very powerful psychedelic. You can ingest it in a number of ways, but the most active way that people do it tends to be smoking it. And so it's a very relatively short psychedelic experience, but other people also, you can also put it into an IV bag, and people, they don't inject it via, you know, needle like it's heroin or something, but you get a slow drip of it, kind of like how people do ketamine or something like that. So, basically what these guys are doing is that they are taking these massive DMT trips, and then they are coming back and they are kind of sketching their journey through the cosmos to kind of take away some of the mysticism and the woo-woo of all of this. What psychedelics really do is they disrupt the communication between the center of your brain, your corpus callosum, and the upper panels of your brain, your temporal lobes, right? So that basically disrupting what is your normal pattern recognition and forcing you to use a different part of your brain that you don't normally access or have conscious awareness of. Does that make sense?
It does. Perfect sense.
So instead of me speaking from, you know, this place of regular, like the neural pathways in my brain, I'm speaking from a new set. And it also encourages new neural network growth, which is why there's studies that suggest that, you know, it helps people with severe depression or whatever it is.
PTSD,
actively making new connections between brain cells. So I understand why people are doing this. My concern, though, is, Spike, is that some people try to chase the dragon. Some people, I have known people in my life who have been programmers or they have been in some kind of creative endeavor, and they rely on psychedelics to be their muse in so many ways, or to be their, you know, to be their kind of the spark. And when you abuse psychedelics, over time is when I believe that people start having a hard time, because they're not getting what they quote unquote want out of it, as opposed to letting it just kind of lead them down the path of wherever their brain might take them. And that's where you get bad trips and people start freaking out and, oh my God, it's my dead grandmother. You know, this is where people go wrong, I think. Right. Because they don't necessarily know what they're with the psychedelics. You have to have an intention. You have to know what you're looking for. But you can't force it. In my experience,
this is amazing. I had no idea that this. I had heard recently that psychedelics and microdosing had been realized as a medical tool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, when we talked about that briefly in the past, or last month or so, and I knew of that, but I had no idea it was such a commonplace occurrence. Excuse me, for folks on a regular basis, and not just recreational for fun, but as a practical, you know, creative element.
Yeah, I've done it all. Ketamine, DMT, psychedelics. Andrew, you can go. Thank you very much.
I drank a Pabst once. It wasn't life-changing.
The worst experience, and I wouldn't say the worst, I would say the most radical experience that I ever had, though, was on PCP. That was an entirely different beast. That was a, thank you very much, Andrew. That was,
a listener from Auburn just hit all five spots on his, Jack Stein Spaganel Cairo Midday bingo card.
Right.
Congratulations.
But, I mean, I understand now that more and more people are kind of getting into the realm of psychedelics, but I think the most important aspect of this is knowing that you have to a clinical setting with a therapist or a religious leader is much more beneficial than somebody, and you've heard me say this before, Spike, but I'll say it again. It's much more beneficial than, you know, I'm going to, you know, take a couple grams of mushrooms and go hang out in a fish parking lot and hope that I convene with the Divine Mother.
That's how you get lost in the sauce. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Never make it home. But I will tell you from personal experience that after imbibing, there is a certain amount of a release that you get or a new understanding or a self-understanding. Thank you so much. There's a much deeper understanding of yourself as a being in the world that is, I suppose you have to confront the pieces of yourself that maybe make you a little bit uncomfortable. But I can see why these Silicon Valley guys are doing it, because they want to code better.
Well, when the way you've laid it out and explained it, which I had no idea this stuff existed in for this capacity, how could you not benefit from forging new pathways, from unlocking portions of your brain? We use, what, 5% of our brain if we're lucky?
No, we use all of it. We're just conscious. We're the 5% at a time, basically, is the best way to put it.
Okay, so, fair enough.
Because if you use all of it all of the time, it would be like this massive caloric intake. Anyway, we don't have time to get into science. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, COVID is still in the news. Spike O'Neill demanded that we speak about it.
I did.
He threatened to quit unless we talked about it. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this.